Hello, and welcome back to Crime Cat's True Crime Podcast. I'm Jackie.
And I'm Jessica.
And we are your hosts. So ever since we started our podcast, we have been wanting to shed some light on some cold cases here in our area of Baldwin County, Alabama. And today we will finally be doing that. Since there's not a ton of information, we decided to do two cases on one episode. We'll probably do a lot more of those in the future, but today we'll be covering an unsolved murder of Jerry Lewis Bishop and Kenneth Pierce,
which, by the way, are totally unrelated cases and are not linked.
Both of our cases today are cold cases, so again, they are unsolved mysteries. And if any point you realize you know anything the police may not know about these cases, please contact us or the Baldwin County Sheriff's Department at 251-937-0210. So thanks for listening, and please follow us on all social media and tell us what you think. You can find us on Facebook at Crime Cats, a true crime podcast, where we also have a discussion group. We're also on Instagram at crimecats.truecrime and Twitter at Crime Cats Pod. Thanks again for listening.
Welcome back to Crime Cat's True Crime Podcast. So today we're going to start doing something new. Before we jump into our case today, we want to talk a little bit about some recent true crime pop culture stuff that we've watched. So today we're going to do a case, Susan Cox Powell. We both watch so much true crime that we really just want to talk about what we watch, and we're going to do two today. The first one is going to be Susan Cox Powell, which was on Oxygen. And oh my God, if you haven't seen this, you've got to go watch it right now.
Yeah, there's a couple of podcasts I've listened to. You know, I think Crime Junkie and Cold has one. And then after watching this on Oxygen, it just totally flipped the script. And it showed it from a totally different perspective. And it was, you got to see the videos that they... Yes. had been talking about in the podcast, and it was fucking insane.
It really is. And I really thought I already knew everything, but then this series just, it really shows it with the videos. The videos were really disturbing.
Like, her father-in-law, that is disgusting. Yeah. Okay, we'll keep going.
Stephen Powell, her father-in-law, he is literally the worst. And it made me so angry throughout the whole series. If you don't know anything about this case, I'll briefly summarize it for you. She was a 28-year-old Mormon mom of two young sons. Her name was Susan Cox Powell. She disappeared from the face of Earth one cold winter's day in December 2009 in Utah. The main suspects were her controlling and very strange husband, Josh Powell, who monitored and controlled literally every single thing she did, and her father-in-law, Stephen Powell, who was so sexually obsessed with her, he literally secretly videotaped her all the time.
And kept, like, her tampon wrappers and pads used, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, would steal her underwear.
Yeah.
And, like,
he would follow her around to, like, different malls and stuff like that and try to get shots up her skirt.
While she was trying to get in the car.
Yes. It was the worst thing.
I really actually would love to cover this case, but it just makes me so angry.
Yeah, I don't think I could without
irrationally angry.
Dropping a lot of expletives.
Yeah, we would just cuss the whole time.
I don't think my mom would like that.
No, we won't do it because it's just too enraging. But this case goes, or this documentary that Oxygen did goes super in depth into it. And just in case, you've got to watch this documentary if you're anywhat. You wouldn't be listening.
If you're a crime junkie, you need to watch it for sure.
And you wouldn't be listening to this podcast if you didn't like true crime.
Right.
So if you just got to go listen.
You have to watch it. I mean, I'll give you a little bit of a backstory on it. Eventually, one of the sons, I don't know which one it was, basically ratted out the dad.
Oh, the older
brother.
Yeah.
Because the police interrogated him, and You know, he said, Daddy took mommy out and she didn't come back with us.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, remember?
That's right.
He was like, Daddy took mommy to the mountains and she didn't come back.
And we were not allowed to talk about it.
Yeah.
I remember him saying that as a little kid.
And then, yeah, it's pretty insane.
Well, I don't want to give away the whole thing because the ending is absolutely insane.
Nuts! And you
did not see that coming. Oh, my God. And that 911 call, was that not enraging?
Right.
Where the guy's like, well, we just got to have emergency situations. And the lady's like, this is an emergency situation.
And
he's like, well. Like
5 minutes later, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, watch it, read about it, look it up. It's really sad, especially for the children.
Absolutely.
All right. So what do we got?
For our first case, we are going to do 34-year-old Jerry Lewis Bishop. In December of 1987, Jerry Lewis Bishop was found murdered in a wooded area near Faulkner State Community College, which is now known as Alabama Community College.
We're this local?
This local.
Shoot.
Bay Minette, Alabama, which is where, that's our county seat of our county.
Yeah.
And I actually went to Faulkner State, you know, for way longer than I was supposed to, because
I went for like a hot minute, but I think I only took like English and that was it.
God, I went for literally 5 years for a 2-year degree. So, yeah, whatever. yeah. But Jerry Lee Lewis, he was found.
Reminds me of the singer.
Basically, Jerry Lee Lewis. That's because I just said the wrong name.
Oh, okay. Like, we talk about Great Balls of Fire, dude.
His name is so close to it, it keeps messing me up.
Jerry Lewis Bishop.
Jerry Lewis Bishop.
Okay, got it. Also known as Jerry Lee Lewis.
So sorry, guys. I'm the worst. But he was found basically at Faulkner. There's like a street behind it. He was found shot once in the chest. His blue Chevrolet Monte Carlo was also found nearby in the woods. The Baldwin County Sheriff's investigators theorized someone lured him out into an ambush. Former DA District Attorney David Whetstone believes that someone lured Jerry Lewis Bishop into the woods and waited in a tree stand in a high-powered rifle to kill him. Whetstone said at the time, we believed it was a planned assassination-type killing.
Man, he must have had some enemies to have that happen.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's
you don't really hear about stuff like that around here so much.
Definitely not.
I mean, this was 32 years ago.
He was seen the last time alive on December 20th, 1987 at 11 a.m. He was leaving his mechanic shop on East Hurricane Road in Bay Minette. It was a Sunday. He told his wife, Virginia, that he was going to an auto parts store nearby to buy some parts, and he never arrived at the auto parts shop. What happened in between the short distance between his mechanic shop and the store is still unknown almost 32 years later. And Bay Minette is not a large town.
It's really not. I mean, it's very podunk.
Yeah.
And I mean, everybody has to know everybody.
Everybody knows everybody. It's very tight-knit community.
I mean, that's how most of the towns are here in Baldwin County anyways. Definitely. Like Gulf Shores, Orange Beach, everybody knows everybody.
Absolutely. The next day, December 21st, 1987, a student at Faulkner State spotted his blue Monte Carlo on a dirt road behind the college and found it odd for it to be there. So called security, because they have security on campus. Later that Tuesday morning, just hours after Bishop's car was towed, his body was found about 700 feet from Faculty Drive in the woods on a trail.
Dang.
So my reaction to that.
Was he a student?
No, he was not a student.
Oh, okay.
My reaction to that was his car was just towed, so they didn't treat it like a crime scene, and they probably didn't even check for any
evidence
in his vehicle.
That's probably right, and that's probably why it's still a cold case.
Probably largely, at least. Officials suspected at the time that the murder may have been linked to local burglary. That was a hard word for me to say today.
Words are hard.
Words are hard. So they were thought that it had something to do with some local break-ins. There we go.
We'll just sweeten it up.
Yeah. Years later, D.A. Whetstone stated in an interview in 2011, and I quote, I feel like there was always more than one person involved. Someone had to get him out there. I never believed, he was just taking a hike.
Nobody just takes a hike in Bay Minette.
And in behind the college, that's really random. Like, and it's hard to get where he was. I've been there.
Yeah.
Cause it's like a big U. So you go back and then there's like a track field right there behind uh-huh. where he was. And it's, yeah. So it's a weird place to, you definitely wouldn't be hiking back there. It's
yeah. Do we all. Have any pictures of this area?
We do. And there's actually pictures of his Monte Carlo.
I have to post those on Instagram.
Yeah, we'll post those on Instagram. Bay Minette local Bernard Johnson, then 32, was arrested and charged the day after police found Bishop's body, mm-hmm. which obviously they had some evidence. Before 1987 ended, District Judge Arthur Epperson set Johnson's bail at $100,000.
That's a lot back then.
It is. It really is. But unfortunately, the case was dropped apparently due to lack of evidence. And Johnson's whereabouts are currently unknown.
We need to find out where he's at.
Yeah.
Do use my FBI skills on Facebook.
Right.
I can find anybody.
Bay Minette's police sergeant, Kenneth Hall, at the time of the slaying, said he knew the Bishop family. He said, if you were straight with Jerry Bishop, he was straight with you. And I quote, he could be nice and he could be kind of upsetting. Hard to get along with, Hall said. But I had no problem with him. We got along, and it's all in the way you approached him. Bishop was very well known in his community and wasn't afraid to tell people what was on his mind. Once publicly complained to the Bay Minette City Council about being mistreated by city employees. According to Press Register report, his comments forced a meeting to an abrupt end. He was regarded as outspoken and controversial figure in the Bay Minette community.
It's not really hard to do.
It's really not. I mean, everybody is
very outspoken and controversial if you pick me up and plop me in Bay Minette.
Right. I mean, everyone there, no offense to anyone who's from Bay Minette, but it's very
old Southern
Republican, black or white, like very like, you know,
AKA Trump supporters.
Yes.
I mean, nothing. We won't get into that. Let's just keep moving.
Yes. Politics, but
yeah,
it's very easy to be controversial and right. blame it.
Yeah, I could walk down the street with my septum ring and all my tattoos, and they'd be like, "Who's that woman? That's a witch."
They're definitely gonna raise an eye at you. Yeah. Me and my Ugg boots will be all right.
Yeah, you will. You're a white girl, so
yes,
basic white girl.
Yep. Kenneth Hall later became an investigator for the Bay Minette Police Department. He took Bishop's case on as a personal side project, but he had so much trouble collecting information as attention faded. He said, I could never come up with anything. I got too loaded down with everything, and it's hard to investigate a cold case. I think it was just too cold for too long. And unfortunately, that's all the information that I could find on Jerry Lewis Bishop.
Wow.
It's really sad to me that his family never got justice, and neither did he.
I think that that's a load of bullshit. It just sounds like they didn't try hard enough.
Exactly. Especially with, they didn't investigate his vehicle. They just towed it, you know?
Oh, that kind of pisses me off.
Yep. But it also, I mean, you know me, the conspiracy theorist, I wonder, why didn't they?
Inside cover up.
Maybe it was somebody, because everybody's good old boys and family and friends
exactly.
in the county. Maybe they, you know, knew something about it.
Oh, for sure. That's my first thought. Cover up.
Yep.
Inside cover up.
Yep.
Has to be, because yeah. there's no reason for that.
Yeah.
And I bet they let that person go because they wanted, it was a, yeah. Yeah, I got some thoughts.
Yeah. Well, now we're going to talk about Netflix's new limited series that we both got obsessed with and binged super hard.
We binged hard, but I fell asleep hard.
No, this one's going to, we were going to originally talk about the other one, but this one is unbelievable.
Okay, yes. I love the show.
She couldn't hang out for the other one. She
fell asleep.
We were originally going to do the Evil Next Door about The Nazi dude.
I love that stuff, but it was late, girl.
She was tired. It was like 10:30 at night. And yeah. It was just late for you.
Yeah, I'm old.
But we've both seen Unbelievable, so we're going to talk about that. And we did binge this.
I think we watched all of it within like 48 hours.
We did. But it's crazy because it's so just sad and true.
And trigger warning, if you haven't seen it, there is a lot. If you have any experience with, you know, rape or anything like that, just go in with, you know, some caution, because some of the flashbacks are pretty intense.
Yeah, it definitely has some upsetting scenes. But what's really more upsetting is Marie's treatment by investigators when she reports her rape.
Exactly. And I think a lot of people, especially men, you know what I'm saying? Like, okay, I'm just going to get on a soapbox. Men get raped too.
Yeah.
But they can't report it because then they'll be looked at like they're stupid.
Yep. Or gay.
And shit like that pisses me off.
Absolutely.
I won't get on too much of a rant. I could go on about it, but I'm tired of people not believing other people's stories. And I understand the whole, oh, well, they cried, you know, people have cried wolf before. I think people, women and men, who falsely report rape or abuse of any kind should serve a jail sentence.
Absolutely.
Equal to what a rapist or an abuser would serve.
But I think they should investigate everything thoroughly.
Right. I get it.
But this series, it goes into the harrowing detail. It goes into with detail the ordeal of teenager Marie Adler, played by the beautiful Caitlin Dever, who endures a violent rape in Washington. When other rapes occur in Colorado, a pair of detectives played by Toni Collette and Merritt Weaver link their cases.
By the way.
They were great. They really made the show. They link the cases and begin a joint investigation. And the series really shows a vast difference between the investigations, and that's really what is just crazy to me.
I also loved how they were two different detectives trying to solve the same case, but they went about it two different ways and still got a great outcome.
They really did. It was awesome. It really goes into depth with how people deal with traumas, which was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite part is the real life Marie Adler, which is really her name.
Mm-hmm.
Not only loved the series, but she said it helped her get closure, which is just so amazing.
I know. Yeah. And yeah. So if you guys didn't know, it's based on a true story.
Yep. Absolutely true.
Check that out. If you haven't already watched it, again, watch it with caution. If you know, have ever experienced anything, it could trigger some pretty strong emotions.
But really, it's only the first little bit.
It's only the first couple episodes.
And there's only like a couple of scenes.
Yeah. They're not long lasting. But
you really could fast forward them.
Yeah.
It's
not important.
Yeah.
Like, the first episode is pretty heavy.
Yeah.
But after that, it kind of calms down. It's like peppered through a couple times.
I like how it focuses on the details of like
Her remembering,
yeah.
Yeah.
Which is hard.
Yeah.
Memory is hard and it's tricky.
Especially when something like that happens.
Trauma.
You want to make sure you remember it correctly
and
things start getting blurry because you start thinking about it too much.
And then with the other victims, it shows how they remember things differently.
Mm-hmm.
Like that second victim, she remembers everything exactly to the T.
Mm-hmm.
And that's interesting too.
Because a lot of trauma is different for everybody. A lot of people who experience trauma, they try to block it out.
Right.
So you're not going to remember every detail. And then you have these people that vividly remember their trauma and can tell you every detail.
Like down to the exact colors of their...
The thread in their shoes. Like, and that's what's big to me. Like, I think that police and investigators and stuff need to know individual people experience things
differently. Yeah.
Like... I, for one, try to block things out as much as possible.
Too.
I have a very good photographic memory. I could probably tell you a lot of details about things, but if it's traumatic, I'll try to block it out as fast as I can. But yeah, that show is really good, and I encourage you to really check it out and watch it.
Definitely. So the second case today is about a Kentucky man named Kenneth Pierce. And honestly, I cannot believe how little information I could find on this case. I did a couple of web sleuths threads, and I found one Alabama.com and one WKRG article. And that was it. Which is super interesting because it is a really weird case. And considering how he was found, it's shocking that there's not more information. His remains were found by highway workers in a toolbox on the side of the road in Seminole County, Seminole Community, which is like a unincorporated town,
mm-hmm.
which is like east of Robertsdale, which is like a minute from my town, Somerdale. So it's super local for me.
Like, I never go there, though. I think I've passed through there, like, twice.
The only time I go there is when I'm going to Pensacola, yeah, going 90, because this is exactly where he was found, on 90.
Oh, okay.
Which is exactly where we go when we go to Pensacola. He was found on October 3rd, 2005.
It was fairly recent.
Very recent. It was a horribly gruesome discovery, and it really didn't give investigators very much to work with. Because there were very little physical evidence at the scene, only a badly decomposed body inside of a box.
And I'm assuming that's him.
Yes.
So, I'm sure you'll get into it, so just tell me if it's later or not. But did they know how long he had been there before?
We'll get to it.
Okay.
So, the medical examiner determined the victim had been beaten to death, likely with a baseball bat. And they did find a wallet inside the decaying mass that was his body. Pierce, who lived in Pensacola and was in the area to work after Hurricane Katrina. So this is October 3rd, 2005. It was very short after Katrina.
Oh, yeah.
Because remember, Katrina was in August.
That's right.
So he was not from here. He's from Kentucky. He's just down here working to help with hurricane cleanup.
Okay.
Because there were a lot of people in town, you know, from out of state just here to help. And he was one of those people. He had no family in the area, and the authorities tried hard to find people that knew him but couldn't. So instead, the sheriff's deputies opted to interview patrons and employees at the bars he frequented. Anthony Lowry, a former investigator for the Baldwin County District Attorney's Office, said investigators had more than one strong suspect in the slaying, but could never collect enough evidence to prosecute the case. They finally located some people he had been around near the time of death, Lowry said. But they couldn't pinpoint the day Pierce had been killed. And that's the problem. Establishing timelines, Lowry said. Timelines are a good indicator of a suspect. The longer you get away from that period, the harder those things are to track down.
Makes sense.
Right. Detective Andre Reed with the Baldwin County Sheriff's Department said most information investigators received was unreliable, as it comes from alcoholics, drug users, prostitutes, and transients. Which, I mean, just because you're a transient doesn't mean your information is reliable.
Right. It's a little judgmental.
Drug users and alcoholics, yes, maybe.
I mean,
a little
yeah,
bit.
They see. I think, you know what, though? I trust an alcoholic more than anything.
Yeah.
They usually tell the truth.
That's true. That's very true. But, you know, it's Baldwin County, so they're judgy people over here, including us sometimes. But right. Here we are. Mm-hmm. So that really left the box itself as the only evidence to work with. It had a hard
plastic. What kind of box were we talking about?
Had a hard plastic bottom, but a makeshift top. So it was homemade. It wasn't like a box that someone had bought.
It wasn't like one of those big plastic totes.
No,
whatever.
It was like a huge box. Like, I mean, like big enough to fit a whole body in.
Oh.
Like he wasn't chopped up. Like he was just a full body in this box. Like stuffed, contorted his body into it.
That had to be a hard time.
Investigators were able to determine that the top of the box actually came from a commercial dumpster. So, like, what you would see outside of business, that corrugated plastic. When canvassing the neighborhood near Salvation Army on Q Street in Pensacola, where Pierce would sometimes go, police made a shocking discovery in one of the homeowner's trucks. He had a toolbox on his truck, actually the exact same style top.
And it was missing?
Investigator Reed, yes. It was a corrugated plastic from what they identified as a commercial style dumpster. The only difference was the color.
Mm.
But unfortunately, that discovery did not lead to an arrest. So 14 years later, this case is still unsolved and considered cold. I would really like to know more about this guy who has this in the back of his truck. But there wasn't very much information on that, unfortunately. Some guy in Pensacola. So
just some dude.
Makes me very uncomfortable thinking that there's some, you know, guy running around in Pensacola
boxes
with corrugated back box on the back of his truck. So if you ever see that, watch out for him,
right?
So, yeah, that's pretty crazy.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff around here that we don't even know about.
Yeah. This is something that I really want to start doing more of, is these types of cases, because you don't see this on the news. They don't talk about stuff like this, mm-hmm. because they want people to come down to our area and vacation.
Yeah.
So murders in Baldwin County are very rarely talked about because it's going to scare people off.
Yeah.
And that's our main source of income in Baldwin County is tourism.
Yeah. That's where I make my money.
So, yeah. But I think it should be talked about, even though, you know, everywhere has murders. Everywhere has crimes. So if someone's going to not come down here just because someone was murdered, that's kind of silly. There's probably way more people murdered in, you know, bigger cities.
Obviously. Shit, Mobile's like murder capital of Alabama. Right. Well, I don't know. Birmingham's
pretty
bad.
Pretty seedy sometimes.
Sometimes?
No, it's
all the time.
I had these guests at the restaurant the other day, and they're like, so is Birmingham always so creepy? And I was like, ah.
In the city, yeah.
Well, there's outside, some nice places.
But they're not.
What is that? Five Points? That's nice.
Yeah, and then you got Vestavia Hills, yeah, and all that stuff, nice, but that's not Birmingham.
True.
That's outside the city. It's like you're talking about Atlanta, and you're talking about the Marietta and stuff like that. That's different. So.
And that's all cities, I think. It's just depending on where you're at, and just don't go.
Crime rates are high in cities. It's just what, I mean, I lived in Montgomery for 3-4 years, and we lived on the east side. And that's really that was the only safest place. Was basically lived by Target.
Right? Is there a Target in your neighborhood? Then you're fine.
Yeah, but I was scared to even go to the grocery store past dark.
Yeah.
So like daylight savings time, if all my shopping wasn't done, I mean. So, you know, my ex-husband was in the Air Force, so of course I'd feel safe going on base.
Right, right.
Because there's, you know, military police everywhere. So.
I feel you, because when I was in D.C., I didn't go nowhere without Caitlin. I was like, I can't be anywhere. I was so scared. And she's like, what, 5 feet tall? And I was like, okay, I feel safe with her, which is crazy.
Yeah.
But anyway, so you guys, we are going to start taking case recommendations. We are going to start a thread in the discussion group. So if you have a case that you want us to cover, let us know and post it there. So anything that you want us to talk about, it doesn't have to be murder even. It doesn't have to be any crimes, basically.
Yeah.
I think we can cover. I mean,
I like doing stuff like that. I like recommendations and investigating stuff. So
yeah, but there has to be enough information. So if there's not, then we may do a double feature like this where there's two different types of crimes even. So we'll see. We'll see what we can do. So now it's time for our shout outs, our 5-star reviews, and for being social with us. So again, if you leave any reviews on Apple Podcasts, make sure you leave your name and actually write a review. Otherwise, we can't see anything.
See anything. Like, the only reason why I know that some of the people have left comments is because I can tell, I know their screen name.
Yeah.
So otherwise I don't know who you are. So please leave your name. And if you're not from this area, we don't know you personally, leave your city and or state. So we just want to give you guys a shout out. So Thanks to our friend, Brittany Brockett Davis, for your Apple Podcast 5-star review. Thank you for following us on social media. We love all of our social media fam and all the interactions that we get from you guys. Especially thank you to those who are active in our group, like Allie Russell, Jesse Ager, and Tiffany Elizabeth. Brewer now. Oh. She just got married, Miss Tiffany Brewer. Thank you guys so much for your support, and we love you.
Find us on social media, and we're on Facebook at Crime Cats, a true crime podcast, where we have our discussion group. Gotta check it out. So much fun. We are also on Instagram at crimecats.truecrime and on Twitter at crimecatspod.
One of them.
You'll see us.
All right. Well, thank you guys for listening and stay spooky.